We're talking about the market for cheese and what producers are experiencing. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Glad you could be here. We are America's Dairyland for a reason. Hands down, the top cheese-producing state last year, nearly 3.4 billion pounds. California trailing us, by the way. That's data analytics from Statistica. Are you a cheesemaker or processor? What's it been like working in the pandemic? Have you noticed a change in exports or sales? Have prices stabilized? Can you reach your customers? 800-642-1234. Suzanne Fanning is Chief Marketing Officer for Wisconsin Cheese and Senior Vice President at Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin. Suzanne, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, Kate. Thanks for having me today.
Well, paint a picture for us. How are cheesemakers doing at this point in the pandemic recovery?
You know, I think like every other industry, it's just been a super weird year for cheese all around. But I will tell you that retail sales were certainly up. Butter sales were up 22%. Cheese sales were up 13%. Ice cream was up 10%. And dairy milk sales were even up 2%. So it was an interesting year, and it seems like people returned to that real dairy that they truly loved.
Well, we all recall how some milk suppliers were dumping milk early on in the pandemic, that supply chains were initially turned upside down, super broken. What are some takeaways from all that upheaval for the cheese industry?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, the industry just went into action as quickly as they could to make sure that we were finding homes for all of that milk. And in the end, cheese companies were even having trouble keeping shelves stocked because they needed to produce so much cheese. So again, I think that cheese provided a few things. There were a few consumer trends that we saw. One is that there was that comfort boom. Okay, so consumers wanted to return to things that made them happy about their lives, to return to a simpler time. So we definitely saw that rise in consumers cooking these like grilled cheese sandwiches that they had when they were young and macaroni and cheese, all of that comfort food. The other thing that we saw is that since consumers were not spending money on things like travel and entertainment, they were more likely to spend money on food like great cheese. And cheese is one of those little indulgences that folks could make a really elaborate cheese platter when they sat down to dinner with their family. As you know, that could be the appetizer. And they would feel like they were really doing something neat, like they were in a restaurant. So it was interesting to see how consumers did turn to cheese. Now, we had a record-breaking year for the Wisconsin Cheese website. I mean, our all-time record, I think, was the year before, and that was 1 million users. And we had about 2.8 million unique visitors on our site this year. And the number two page was recipes. I mean, people were looking for those cheesy recipes.
Well, there's no shortage of grilled cheese and mac and cheese in our household. And I can see what you mean by that comfort boom, because people were looking for comfort, especially early on when we were all holed up at home. So what do cheese sales currently look like here?
So cheese sales are still up. It's hard to compare it. And I think, again, with any industry, to compare it to last year, because last year was just so strange.
Mm-hmm.
So, but what we're seeing is that some of those cheese sales are really holding up. So the March 2021 cheese sales at retail were up 9.9% compared to March 2019.
We have Suzanne Fanning with us as we discuss the state of the cheese industry. She's Chief Marketing Officer for Wisconsin Cheese. Have you been unable to find your favorite cheese? You can ask about it. What is your favorite cheese, cheese lovers? We want to hear from you. And how are you cooking with cheese at this point? Are you planning to attend a dairy breakfast this month? 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Suzanne, give us some historical context here. I mean, last month the state celebrated its 180th anniversary of cheese making. You know, how did it get that toehold in Wisconsin?
Isn't that amazing? Yes, 180 years of cheesemaking. And what's really interesting is that Wisconsin has only been a state for 173 years. So that means we were making cheese in Wisconsin before we were even officially a state. The first cheese factory was established in Lake Mills in 1841, and that was built by Ann Pickett. And there were even reports of people making cheese in the state before that, but this was the first official cheese factory. What's really neat about Wisconsin is that settlers came over from Switzerland and from France and from Italy and Germany, and they brought all of these great cheese-making traditions with them. And they settled here because the land reminded them of the homes they'd left behind. We really have the perfect setup for dairy farming and making that great quality milk to turn into great quality cheese. And so that's why we had so many different cheesemakers settle in the state of Wisconsin. But what's really, really cool is that not only do we have those old world traditions, we have this great Wisconsin innovation. So we're continuing to innovate all the time, creating new favorite cheeses. And Wisconsin has even created brand new cheeses. I mean, obviously, I'm sure most listeners know that Colby cheese was invented in Colby, Wisconsin. But we didn't stop there. We have all kinds of different cheeses that we're making. It's an incredible cheese-making community in Wisconsin, collaborative and just helping each other and challenging each other. And so it's really cool to see that the stuff that comes out of Wisconsin. It's no wonder that we win more awards than any other state or country.
Suzanne, do those early roots give us a leg up today? I mean, we are far and away the leading producers of cheese in the U.S.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we've got some great families who came over here and settled and just brought those incredible cheese making skills with them. So definitely that has helped us a lot. And just a lot of other things that we've done. I mean, we've remained the leaders in quality and innovation through things that we've done. Like, for instance, we're the only state in the country that requires a license to make cheese. I mean, that's kind of shocking that no one else requires a license. We also are the only place outside of Switzerland where you can become a master cheesemaker. And becoming a master cheesemaker takes a minimum of about 13 years. So to us, it is like serious business, this cheese making. So that's another reason. We also have the Center for Dairy Research down at UW, which helps us kind of lead in innovation.
Let's bring in a caller now. Lisa is joining us from Madison. Hi, Lisa. What would you like to say about cheese?
Well, I'd just like to add, we lived in England for a few years, and we would drive to like Cheddar, England, where they make the cheddar in the caves. They've done that for I don't know how many centuries. We still like the cheese in Wisconsin best. We would go to France. We'd have some cheese there, and we still say, oh, Wisconsin cheese. We have friendly arguments with our friends in England. They have to come and visit us in Wisconsin because the cheese there is so much better. And it's true. We really did prefer it. It's just the best.
Lisa, thank you so much. Suzanne, you know, Lisa lived the world over, but still comes back to Wisconsin for finding her favorite cheese.
I'm so glad to hear it. I couldn't agree with you more. Thank you so much for saying that.
Well, I want to ask you, too, Wisconsin has led the country in farm bankruptcies. How has the decline in the number of dairy farms and the number of herds affected the cheesemaking industry?
Well, yes, that's definitely sad. But what we are seeing is that some farms are consolidating. There's still the same number of cows. So farms are getting bigger. Businesses some businesses are making it work really, really well. The cheesemakers are committed to working with their local farmers to try to minimize that happening. But yeah, that is unfortunately something that we've seen. We're still over 7,000 dairy farms strong, and so that's encouraging to us. But yes,
do you find that cheesemakers make a relationship with a specific dairy and then stick with that dairy to make their cheese for a long-term commitment?
Oh, they absolutely do. And a lot of cheesemakers work with a variety of different dairy farmers because they need a lot of milk to make cheese. So it's a 10-to-1 ratio to make cheese. So they do, a lot of the cheesemakers will say they work within a 50 or 70 mile radius, and they have the milk trucks that go and pick up from all of the dairy farms in their area. But it is a very personal relationship. And we know that we had cheesemakers who were just committed to saying, you know what, I'm not going to let bad things happen. I'm going to make sure that I'm continuing to make cheese and I'm continuing to buy this milk. And so we saw some great examples of that partnership, particularly over the last year.
Suzanne Fanning is Senior Vice President at the nonprofit Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin. We're taking a closer look at the market for Wisconsin cheese, where challenges are at this stage in the pandemic. Do you buy specialty cheeses on a regular basis? What do you seek out? Is your favorite cheese available to you? Restaurant owners, what do you notice about the market when buying cheese for business? 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Suzanne Fanning here on the Ideas Network. We're talking cheese sales and exports in the market for cheese producers at this stage in the economic recovery. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A milk marketer for a dairy co-op in Madison told WPR back in March that many small cheese plants in the state had gone from being steady consumers to buying milk sporadically because they were struggling to move their inventory. Cheese producers, what are sales like headed into summer? Milk suppliers, what do you think of the market for cheese? Join in 800-642-1234. Suzanne Fanning is with Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin with us for about 10 more minutes. Simon is joining us from Dodge County. Hi, Simon. What is your question?
I'm a retired dairy farmer. I started in about 1978. We got about $15 per hundred. That was considered a very good price at that time. During the Great Recession, we were shipping milk for $9.90 a hundred or $10.10 a hundred. The Great Recession, we really had low milk prices, but then they went up again. Now that I'm retired, I've lost track. What is 100 pounds of 3.5% butterfat milk bringing to the farmer nowadays?
Suzanne?
Yeah, you know something? I think that prices have been pretty good recently. I don't have the exact price right now, but what I'm hearing is that a lot of farmers are optimistic in general right now just because prices are doing okay. Of course, they could always be better, right? We know how hard our dairy farmers work, and we like to see those prices as high as we possibly can. We're working hard to make sure we're continuing to drive demand and build support. But yeah, sometimes it is a really tough world out there for dairy farmers. And I just want to say thank you to you for all that you did to help feed the world and help provide nutritious milk throughout your career.
Simon, did you retire from dairy farming on the timeline that you expected?
A little bit earlier than I expected. I was seeing a very poor return on capital and labor, and health issues in the family and things like that. And
mm-hmm.
It just seemed like, it would be a good way to break my neck if I'd have kept going at age 60-something. So I did retire a little bit earlier than I thought I would. That wasn't a very good answer she gave. She didn't really say if milk has gone up or down or stayed the same. Or that's kind of the way it works. You expect that milk, and you don't give a very good price for it. That's why there are less dairy farms, and these larger dairy farms are head over heels in debt, and people don't realize it.
Did you find it stressful to continue to grow your herd? Did you find that you were pressured to be able to keep up by having to expand?
No.
Okay.
Lower interest rates, I think, have gotten people into this expansion mode, and some government grants and things like that. I don't think everybody is extremely happy about their expansions out there. Some people wish they hadn't done it. They kind of look back to 10 years ago and think, boy, it was kind of nice the way things were.
Yeah.
I do see more. We used to see brothers farming together, but they would each have their own individual farm on the same road maybe and share equipment.
Uh-huh.
Now we see these brothers consolidating. I've seen as many as four or five brothers working together on one large building site to keep all the cattle together. So things are always changing, that's for sure.
Well, Simon, thank you for calling in and providing that perspective as we look at the state of cheese making and the dairy industry with Suzanne Fanning. She's Senior Vice President at Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin. Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Jeff is joining us from Delafield. Hi, Jeff. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning. My question is a little lighter than the last one, but I'm interested in Limburger cheese. What is the history of Limburger cheese, and is it true that it's only made in Wisconsin today? Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Suzanne.
It is true that Limburger is only made in Wisconsin, and certainly we have the only master cheesemaker for Limburger in Wisconsin as well. It's funny you should say that because we opened up some Limburger last night and enjoyed it for our Memorial Day celebration. Yeah, so Limburger, for those of you who don't know out there, is like a very pungent cheese. It has a very strong aroma and a very delicious taste. But it's interesting because anytime that we post something on social media about Limburger, we have hundreds and hundreds of comments. There are some serious fans out there.
What makes a specialty cheese a specialty cheese?
That is a great question, and I think lots of cheese experts debate over that, and I'm not sure that we have like a really, really great answer to give. Some people say it depends on the type of cheese. Some people say that it depends on where it is in the grocery store. Is it in one certain case or is it in the other case? So all I know is that the cheeses in Wisconsin are all pretty special to me wherever they reside in the grocery store.
Well, let's look globally here for a moment. What have cheese exports been looking like? Where is Wisconsin cheese going?
So Wisconsin ranks about fourth in the export of cheese, and it's definitely something that we're trying to grow. The top countries that we export to are Mexico, Canada, Saudi Arabia, Japan, and South Korea. In Saudi Arabia, we've seen about a 618% increase for cheese exports this year alone.
What do you think is going on there?
I just think that they're interested in getting some of the great quality food that we can get. I also think that we are working hard to make connections. We work with USDEC, the U.S. Dairy Export Council, and with DATCAP, the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And the industries are really coming together to make sure that we are helping cheesemakers make those connections, educate them, and pave the way for them to export their cheeses. So in 2021, year to date, we've exported about over $8 million in cheese products to our partner countries.
When you look at other very important facets of the industry, like people going to restaurants more and more, and certainly school lunches, although summer is coming, but you know, certainly the food continues in the summer. What do you see there in terms of cheese?
Well, definitely restaurants are huge consumers of Wisconsin cheese, and the restaurant business took a huge hit last year, as everybody knows. So now we are looking at people becoming vaccinated. We're seeing restaurants opening up, and definitely we're very, very optimistic as we continue to see those consumer dollars begin to shift from sort of the retail sales and back to food service. I think people are becoming more and more comfortable dining out again. And again, they're going to look for those foods, particularly in Wisconsin, those locally produced foods, those foods with a story. People love to see Wisconsin cheese on the menu, and it's called out more and more.
Okay, Suzanne, so here's the biggest question. What is your favorite cheese?
Oh, asking me my favorite cheese is like asking me my favorite child.
I know.
All my favorites for different reasons, right?
No.
Oh, it's absolutely true. I will tell you that if I'm building a cheese board, I love to put some beautiful cheeses on there. So if you look at a cheese like Chris Raleigh's Red Rock, it is a bright orange cheddar because it has double annatto, and then it has a blue vein running through it. So on a cheese board, that's always beautiful. Also, Sartori cheeses are beautiful on a cheese board because they have those soaked rinds. So you can get one soaked in Merlot that has like that deep kind of purple rind. For eating and cooking, I love some of the incredible cheeses that are coming out of Belgioioso up in the Green Bay area. just really great Italian cheeses. Crave Brothers also has some really great Italian cheeses. I mean, there are so many, it truly is hard. And every single cheese board I make, I will say, looks completely different. And I love to like sit around and tell the story about those cheesemakers and about those dairy farmers that have produced those cheeses.
Suzanne, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Suzanne Fanning is Senior Vice President at Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin. For disclosure, Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin is a business sponsor of WPR. Just a quick heads up on our programming. We are preparing to hear from Dr. Anthony Fauci on the morning show this week. We want to collect your questions ahead of time for Dr. Fauci, the chief medical advisor to the White House. Leave your question at this number. Here it is, 833-424-3327. That number again, 833-424-3327. Be sure to mention your name and city so we can thank you for the question. Just ahead, we look at the job of electing district attorneys and why these races so often go uncontested. That's after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. District attorneys, they play an extremely powerful role in the courts. These prosecutors have broad authority to decide whether or not to bring charges. But when they run for office every 4 years in Wisconsin, they often go unchallenged. Bridget Bowden has more about what this means for the justice system.
Kim Lawton didn't always want to go into criminal law. In fact, when she was in law school, she found it depressing.
I just saw the sadness, and I saw the brokenness of our system.
But after a few years of working in the legal system, she began to see potential for change. So she did something that few people do. She ran against the incumbent district attorney.
My husband and I basically just went out, knocked doors, and said, "This is who I am. And this is what I would like to see."
Lawton was elected Bayfield County District Attorney in 2016, but her drive to hold one of Wisconsin's 71 DA seats is somewhat rare. In 2020, only 7 of these seats were contested. It's not a new phenomenon and not surprising to most people who work in the legal field. It's a difficult job with heavy scrutiny and lower pay prospects than working in private law. In rural parts of the state that are facing lawyer shortages, there may not be any qualified or interested candidates.
There's a disincentive to our experienced prosecutors to step up.
That's Dodge County DA Kurt Klomberg, president of the Wisconsin District Attorneys Association. He says one issue is how prosecutor salaries are set in Wisconsin. Elected district attorney salaries are based on county population, while assistant DA salaries are on a progression plan. So it's possible for ADAs to make more money than the prosecutors they work under. That's a problem, Klomberg says.
Assistant district attorneys don't want to step up and become district attorney because either they're going to take a pay cut, or for the majority of them, they're looking in their crystal ball and saying, by the time this next term is over, I'm going to be making more than that district attorney's.
The DA's Association, along with several other criminal justice-related agencies, have asked the legislature to address the problem in this year's budget process. They want district attorney salaries to be standardized across counties, set at the top of the range for ADAs. Klomberg thinks this will encourage more people to run for the position, and it will be a good thing for the system overall. In the state public defender's office, legislative liaison Adam Plotkin agrees.
It's always good when there are competitive elections. It forces issues to get talked about. It helps the electorate understand where a candidate may stand and what they might do if they're elected to office. When there's no contested race, those questions often aren't even ask.
The district attorney's decisions can directly affect incarceration rates and can make or break criminal justice reform efforts in areas like low-level drug offenses, treatment court programs, and parole and probation violations, according to reform advocates. David Liners is the state director for criminal justice reform group Wisdom. He says district attorneys have a huge amount of discretion.
The district attorney supplies a lot of judgment. They're going to decide what the charges are going to be, and they're going to decide how hard to come down on somebody or whether not to, whether to let things go.
In Bayfield County, District Attorney Kim Lawton has implemented a number of reforms, including a pre-charge diversion program for first-time offenders. Although she didn't start the program in her county, she supports the use of treatment courts as a way to shift focus onto more serious crimes. She often references a speech given by U.S. Attorney General Robert Jackson in the 1940s.
And one of my favorite lines is, "The citizen's safety lies in the prosecutor who tempers zeal with human kindness." And I think that's just remarkable. We do have to temper zeal with human kindness, both for victims and defendants. And I think that's the heart of prosecution.
Wisconsin's district attorneys will appear on the ballot again in 2024. Bridget Bowden, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And this story was produced for WisconText, a collaboration between WPR and PBS Wisconsin. Find out more at WPR.org. Now we look more closely at the district attorney situation with the reporters behind the story, and you can join in. What do you know about the DA for your county? The regular term of office for each district attorney is 4 years. Has your county's DA been on the job much longer? Do you remember voting them into office? How do you think the state prosecutor's office does in supporting DAs around the state? 800-642-1234. Bridget Bowden is special projects reporter at Wisconsin Public Radio. Bridget, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And Will Keneally is here, multimedia reporter at PBS Wisconsin. Will, thanks for being here.
Hi, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Hi. Well, let's start with you, Will. You know, you call district attorneys the local gatekeeper to the criminal justice system. Extremely powerful position, yet there isn't that strong desire for these jobs at the ballot box. What about running for elected office here? Is that a barrier to getting more people interested for these jobs?
Yes, definitely. So for district attorneys or potential candidates, you're opening yourself up to a lot of scrutiny. That on top of having to either front the funds yourself or raise money to run for office. A lot of people are just hesitant to, you know, kind of put themselves through that, their families through that, to run for this top prosecutorial job.
And Bridget, you know, that is also running for office. That is a high dollar amount. It takes a lot at this day and age.
Absolutely. You know, we heard from Kim Lawton, the Bayfield County DA, in my story, and she actually spent several thousand of her own dollars when she ran for office in 2016. She told me that she actually did receive one contribution from someone she didn't know, and that I believe was for $10. But other than that, she funded her race herself. So it can be quite expensive.
Will, how long has this been an issue with these uncontested races?
It's been a while. So over the last decade, the Appeal did some great reporting on this. As many as 31 of the 71 district attorneys have not had a contest. So it's 71 district attorneys, one for each Wisconsin county, and then Shawnee and Menominee counties share a single DA. This also affects a lot of the most populous counties in Wisconsin. So kind of running through the list, Milwaukee and Dane counties have both had only one contested race in the last four cycles. Waukesha has had zero. Brown and Racine counties have only had one contested race in the last four cycles. So for the past decade or so, a lot of these races have been just uncontested.
And when you say Shawnee and Menominee sharing, I'm wondering, is there a rural and urban divide to this issue, Bridget? Are there differences in rural areas versus urban?
You know, I think just as Will said, this is an issue that affects both rural and urban counties, although the experts that I spoke with did say that in rural counties, there's an aspect that doesn't really come into play in the more populous counties, which is that a lot of Wisconsin's rural counties are already facing a lawyer shortage. So in some of those counties, there just may not be any qualified or interested candidates. And that's not really the case, you know, in Dane County or Milwaukee County.
Yeah, Will, did you see that in your reporting that just rural areas just lack the number of lawyers and so interest is just low?
Exactly. So a lawyer, a private practice lawyer, can travel from say, Milwaukee, for example, to other counties where the district attorney has to be kind of from the area that they're representing. So to find these people who are living in each one of the 71 prosecutorial districts of Wisconsin, it's certainly a challenge, yes.
We're talking with Will Keneally, multimedia reporter at PBS Wisconsin. Bridget Bowden here with Wisconsin Public Radio Special Projects reporter. They've been looking into DA races. When was the last time you voted for a district attorney? What do you want to know about district attorneys and this role in your county? 800-642-1234. Will, back up for us, if you would, and explain what these DAs do in the county itself.
So kind of the short answer to this is they're the chief prosecutor for each county. The more nuanced answer to this is they function as kind of the gatekeepers to that local criminal justice system, as you were mentioning before. So they're the person who is taking a look at all these potential cases and really deciding what to do with them, whether to take them to trial, put them through the criminal court process, divert them to court alternatives like a drug court, make plea deals with the defendants. So they have a lot of discretion in that sense. In many cases, they will then try the cases in courts. Some of the larger counties will have kind of a stable of deputy and assistant district attorneys that will actually be in court trying the cases. They also, to some degree, function as liaisons for the victims and the victim's family to the criminal justice system, kind of on par with like a public defender or a defense attorney. The other interesting thing too is, say there's a vacancy or some kind of absence where a district attorney from a neighboring county may not be able to kind of meet the full workload of their county. A DA from a neighboring county will then step in and help fill that workload or fill the function of that district attorney.
Bridget, in your reporting, did you find that the duties and responsibilities were very uniform from one county to the next?
Well, it certainly depends on which counties you're talking about,
okay.
Because for some of the larger counties, let's say Milwaukee County, it's a much larger office. You know, there's a lot more cases that they're looking at. But in terms of, you know, what's legislatively sort of assigned to district attorney, the core duties are the same, but depending on where you are and the size of your office, it could be somewhat different.
We have journalists Bridget Bowden of WPR. Will Keneally is here of PBS Wisconsin. They've been reporting on district attorney elections around the state and why so many run unopposed. What do you think is the reason why attorneys don't run for the job? What does it mean for the criminal justice system? What is the DA situation in your county? Still time to talk about this. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It is a powerful job. We're examining why DAs rarely face election challengers and what this means for the future of our criminal justice system. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin elects 71 district attorneys in partisan elections. The district attorneys serve four-year terms. They preside over a single county. Nearly all DA elections in our state went uncontested last year. What would it take to meaningfully increase the number of contested elections? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. We have journalists Bridget Bowden and Will Keneally of WPR and PBS Wisconsin, and they've been looking into this issue. They stay with us. Bridget, let's talk about salary here for a moment. As you've been reporting, you know, assistant DAs on a progressive pay scale can ultimately make more than their boss, more than the DA. What does that mean?
Right. So it basically means that if someone were to be in an assistant DA position for enough time, a number of years, they could progress to a level that actually is a higher salary than the DA they work under. And that's because DA salary is sort of on a different scale. It is set based on the county's population. Someone I spoke to, the Dodge County District Attorney, who's also the president of the Wisconsin DA's Association, said that is really a disincentive for experienced district attorneys who may be working as assistant district attorneys right now, it's a disincentive for them to run for DA.
Yeah, yeah. Is there change on the horizon?
Well, so there is a group of criminal justice related agencies, the State Public Defender's Office, the District Attorneys Association, the Association of State Prosecutors, the Department of Justice, and the Director of State Courts Office. They, in their budget proposal this year, have asked that that be changed. What they want is for DA salary to be standardized across counties, and they want it to be sort of set at the maximum level that assistant district attorneys make. And under their proposal, that would apply in every county except Milwaukee County. Because Milwaukee County has such a large population, the DA salary is already higher than the maximum assistant district attorney salary there.
Well, Will, connect the dots for us. You know, these are powerful positions. How does this ultimately affect the criminal justice system?
Right. I'll also say, too, to the point of the salaries, this is also a way to encourage district attorneys or potential district attorneys, potential prosecutors to go into some of these rural areas, especially if you have young lawyers kind of right out of law school who see prosecutorial jobs as a way to get kind of really marketable trial experience that they could take to private practice. Raising the pay salaries for kind of rural district attorneys would encourage some people to maybe, you know, go into these rural counties, run for district attorney, or also stay in the office too, as they kind of gain more experience, which can help kind of foster more experience within the offices.
But staying too, I mean, has the flip side to that, that, you know, the trying different things or reforms might not work if you can't get new people into the office.
That's exactly right. Some of the advocates that we spoke to said, you know, just the sheer amount of turnover of district attorneys can either, you know, spark new change or hold on to these traditions. That exists both in, you know, keeping a single DA, keeping that person in office, but also kind of thinking of the criminal justice system holistically. The advocates were saying, you know, if you have large turnover of DAs, but who are kind of holding on to a more traditional view of prosecution, that district attorney's office will have a very traditional prosecutorial view.
I think we saw the DA's office on full display in Kenosha, right? And the prosecuting, not prosecuting the officer who shot Jacob Blake. I'm wondering your insights there, Will, how you've seen discretion used or not used in prosecution with DAs.
So I think there are kind of two examples in recent Wisconsinites' memories of district attorneys deciding not to prosecute in very large profile cases. You have Kenosha with the Jacob Blake shooting, and also in Dane County with the Tony Robinson shooting as well.
Mm-hmm.
In both cases, so in the Dane County example, DA Ishmael Ozan said that the officer acted lawfully. In the Kenosha example, it's similar to some degree. In that case, DA Michael Gravely said that if he took the case to trial, he'd have too hard of a time proving that the officer didn't act in self-defense. And so he relied more on kind of a professional ethics. He said he couldn't ethically bring a case to trial that he didn't think he would win.
What do you make of that, Bridget, that the DA is allowed to have such discretion over what does ultimately get prosecuted, what goes to court?
Right. I spoke to some people who called the DA the single most important role in the criminal justice system. One thing that I thought was really interesting is because so many of our criminal cases end up with a plea.
Mm-hmm.
That makes the charging decision so, you know, ever the more important because oftentimes the charge is the final decision due to a plea. And so I do think they're incredibly powerful. I should note that we also see very few contested races for judge. So this isn't you know, a problem that's isolated to district attorney's office, but district attorneys do hold really a lot of power.
And going back to the salary thing, you know, judges are paid the same across the state. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah. We're talking with Bridget Bowden and Will Keneally. Bridget is a special projects reporter at Wisconsin Public Radio. Will is a multimedia reporter for PBS Wisconsin. As we look more deeply into the issues around district attorneys, why these races go uncontested, you can join in with your insights, what you see about the DA in your county when he or she was last elected. 800-642-1234. Will DA races line up with presidential elections? They're partisan offices. What is the political makeup and influence of Wisconsin's DAs?
So this to me is really fascinating that we have kind of partisan offices in the criminal justice system, but their fall elections, partisan offices line up with the presidential elections. So if you're looking at the top of the ticket, you know, make sure you scan down ballot to see some of those races. It largely kind of mirrors what I consider like a, you know, statewide election map. You have a lot of kind of Republican leaning counties and a few more urban Democratic leaning counties. So the breakdown is 41 Republican district attorneys, 23 Democratic district attorneys, 7 independent district attorneys as well. If you're checking my math, that's 71 again, because Shawnee and Menominee counties share a single DA. What I also want to point out with that too is, so for instance, like Milwaukee County, city and county, for other elected offices, say like state assembly, state senate, you'll have many seats because it's proportioned out by a population, where the district attorney is representing a whole kind of acreage in Milwaukee. So you'll have a single person kind of representing kind of a more outsized, in these urban areas, more outsized population. The other thing that I find really fascinating is, to go back to the Kenosha example, so you have two kind of elected offices that have a player role in the criminal justice system, district attorney and county sheriff. So in some of these counties, like Kenosha, for example, you have a Democrat in the DA's office, Michael Gravely, but a Republican in the sheriff's office, David Bett. So when you have the criminal justice system in Kenosha, for example, it looks a little bit more purple than just the kind of blue DA.
So, Bridget, ultimately, could increasing competition in district attorney races, if that could happen, would it lead to criminal justice reform? Would it lead to change?
So I think the experts that I spoke with would largely say it depends. Most of the people I spoke with think that contested elections are a good thing. They're a good thing for democracy. It's good to get people talking about the issues at play in any given election. And if there's no debate, there's no debate, right? Mm-hmm. But then on the other hand, I think people I spoke with, you know, they want to make sure that people who are running for DA, you know, really want to have that position and they want to do a good job. So I think if it would it lead to reform, I would say it's possible, but it depends on the circumstances.
Bridget and Will, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Bridget Bowden is special projects reporter at Wisconsin Public Radio. Will Keneally is a multimedia reporter at PBS Wisconsin. Just ahead, we talk with a senior fellow at the Brookings Institute about problems with the national debt and what it might cause. Are you concerned about the nation's debt? Should we cut government spending or rein in federal spending? 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.